Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present John Nichols, Washington correspondent with The Nation magazine, who looks at the declining approval rating of President Bush among Americans as seen in recent public opinion polls. David Glazer, national director of the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride, who describes the transcontinental bus caravan being organized to raise awareness about the plight of immigrants, many of whom are subject to low pay and dangerous working conditions. And John Wilhelm, president of the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees International Union, who discusses his union's victory at Yale University and the wider significance for the labor movement. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
The Guardian newspaper reports that Saudi Arabia, under renewed heat for its links to terrorists, is inquiring how to obtain a nuclear weapon. A strategy paper is circulating at the highest levels of the Saudi kingdom in Riyadh. It looks at three options: developing a nuclear program as a deterrent, forming an alliance with an existing nuclear power, and pushing for an agreement on a nuclear-free Middle East. It had been assumed that Saudi rulers were happy to enjoy the protection of the U.S. nuclear umbrella, but with the fallout from the 9/11 attacks and the alleged Saudi role in funding terrorists, the kingdom is looking for alternatives. According to United Nations officials and international arms experts, the Saudi leaders feel pressure from Iran, which has an active nuclear program, and Israel, which is thought to possess over 200 nuclear warheads. It has long been feared the oil-rich Saudi kingdom had nuclear ambitions. In 1988, they bought intermediate-range missiles from China that could put a nuclear warhead in any city in the Middle East. As one UN official concluded, regional insecurity tends to produce a quest for a nuclear umbrella. With the expanding war on terrorism and increasing casualties, the Pentagon is turning to the Latino population to play a larger military role. Senior Pentagon officials are calling Latinos the most promising ethnic group for recruitment because their numbers are growing so rapidly in the U.S., constituting a target population with large numbers of low-income men with few job or educational opportunities. The U.S. military is also reaching out to non-citizens with a promise from the Bush administration of immediate citizenship, bypassing the standard 5-year wait for a green card. There are more than 37,000 non-citizens, almost all Latinos, currently enlisted in the military service. Some recruiters have even gone into Mexico seeking candidates who may already have U.S. residency papers, angering Mexican authorities. According to Britain's independent newspaper, Pentagon officials hope to raise Latino numbers in the military from about 10% to 22%, a figure cited recently by John McLaurin, Deputy Secretary of the Army. Statistics from the Pew Hispanic Center, a nonpartisan think tank, show that Latinos are already doing dangerous combat jobs in disproportionate numbers. While they make up 9.4% of enlisted men and women, 17.7% of them handle weapons. The first casualty in the war in Iraq was a Latino non-citizen, a Guatemalan orphan named Jose Gutierrez, and other casualties have included many non-citizens and immigrants. During the Vietnam War era, the Pentagon singled out poor people for both the draft and deployment on the front lines. But this is the first time a specific ethnic group has been targeted for recruitment. Anti-war groups have denounced the Pentagon's strategy as exploitation of an impoverished group to carry out the combat duties of the U.S. war on terrorism. In the latest battle for health care reform, the state of Illinois is looking into buying lower-cost prescription drugs directly from Canada. The state is modeling its program after the initiative in Springfield, Illinois, which has enrolled 800 city employees in a voluntary plan that covers maintenance medications that are purchased directly from a Canadian wholesaler. Springfield Mayor Michael Albano predicts the city could save between $4 and $9 million if most city employees join the plan. Canadian pharmaceuticals can be as much as 80% cheaper than their American counterparts. The savings have drawn thousands of senior citizens and others seeking cheaper drugs to cross-border sales estimated to be worth $650 million a year. Meanwhile, the Bush administration is looking to halt the cross-border trade. The Justice Department has gotten an injunction against RX Depot, a chain of 85 storefront stores that imports medications directly from Canada. The Food and Drug Administration has sent undercover agents to expose the traffic in Canadian pharmaceutical drugs. The agency investigated the Springfield, Illinois program and claims that Mayor Michael Albano is allied with an illegal drug distributor. The mayor responded that the FDA conducted a sting operation on the wrong pharmacy. This week's news summary was compiled by Britta Brundage and Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Denise Manzari.
As George W. Bush addressed the United Nations General Assembly September 23rd in an attempt to win support from skeptical governments from around the world for what has become a chaotic and bloody U.S. occupation of Iraq, the president was quickly losing political support at home. The combination of an anemic economy and continued instability both in Iraq and Afghanistan have contributed to a loss in confidence in the president as seen in recent public opinion polls. Several polls conducted in late September found that President Bush's approval rating had sunk to around 50%, his lowest standing since he took office after the disputed election of 2000. Support among Americans for the Bush administration's war in Iraq has also seen a precipitous drop, from a high in the over 60% range to a new low of 50%. Although many Democratic Party leaders had voted for a congressional resolution authorizing Mr. Bush's invasion of Iraq, some Democrats now running for the White House are openly attacking the president for misrepresenting the truth in making his case for a U.S. war. The growing concern among Americans about the weak economic recovery, coupled with the loss of nearly 3 million jobs since the president was sworn into office, has emboldened many Democrats' critique of the Republicans' foreign and domestic policies. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with John Nichols, Washington correspondent with The Nation magazine, who looks at the president's declining approval rating and the strength of the Democratic